This podcast is a 2020 Pod Roger production. The Trainer's Edge is supported by GrowSites. Affordable, beautiful, professional websites, customized to your specific needs. To see how you can grow your project, visit GrowSites. GROWSIT.ES.
Welcome to episode 5 of The Trainer's Edge. In front of the whiteboard and the devil's tool. I'm Graham Giblin. What I've been sharing is about being a trainer, not doing training. I'm not going to teach you how to train people. You already know how to do that. You have qualifications to prove it. But there are some things they can't teach you in the training. So that's what I want to talk about, including the devil's tool. Most of us teach the units, what school teachers call teaching to the exam. The only objective test of success for teachers and students is the exam result, or in our case, the assessment. Your time is limited, so you have to make sure you've covered all the elements and that the students know how to answer the questions or use the tools correctly and provide physical evidence in writing or in a product. Our job is training and assessment. Our work is inspiring, motivating, and empowering. As Ken Robinson says, it's all about enabling, facilitating, mentoring, and lighting up imaginations. I don't advocate ignoring the regulations or the units and elements or trying to work around them. We must comply with those requirements. We have to make certain our students learn what's required and that the regulations are followed. I recall a day when I proudly brought a set of completed assessments to my training manager, and he said, and where are the students' names on all the pages? What? Not the glowing response I expected. I said, they're here on the front page. And he said, oh no, they have to sign every page. I've never found that requirement anywhere in the regulations, but it doesn't matter. Every time since then, I've made sure it's done. Every time. When it comes to regulations, too much bureaucracy is never enough. We follow the rules. But I think we also have a moral duty to do more, to stretch the students, enrich their lives. So, let's get in front of the whiteboard. One of the ways of making the course more than its basic elements, when you're in front of the whiteboard, is contextualization. I know context is mentioned in the regulations, but not in an individual student sort of way. In the regulations, it's all about industry consultation. Contextualizing should be done whenever you notice how an element or unit of competency relates to any individual in the group, or to the whole group, and not just in the context of their training or their ultimate work, but also in normal everyday life. Contextualizing makes the training meaningful for students at the micro level and useful broadly, and it can motivate them to engage in the learning. I love the whiteboard. When I'm training, it's how I think. It's how I make sure I don't forget something I just thought of that might fit in later on. Just scribble it over here down in the corner. The whiteboard lets me freelance ideas. Every class is different, and everyone has different needs, and sometimes something fresh comes to mind that makes sense in the context of the training and the class as a whole. No matter how often I teach a course, freelancing my ideas helps me to personalize and contextualize in the moment, specifically for this group and the individual students in it. I don't go out of my way to think of new things, I just let them pop up. I'm often more surprised than the students because they think it's all part of the grand plan. Need to be careful, though. You can't let an idea slip out before you've checked it's appropriate and won't hurt sensitivities. Not that you shouldn't hurt sensitivities, but because if you do, it can disrupt the class and break the trust between you and them. Monitoring what's going on in the class is important. I find that quite quickly the class becomes a beast with many heads. Sometimes, though, one head nods off or scratches itself. That student might need a hand. First thing in the day in front of the whiteboard, I recommend congratulations. Congratulations on how well you went yesterday. Good work. and today we're going to be doing so-and-so. And at the end of the day, thank you for the great work you've done today. Congratulations on seeing it through and doing so well. Tomorrow we'll be doing such and such. See you all at 9 a.m. One of the favourite things I've learnt in front of the whiteboard was about the use of any questions. You'll often find trainers asking the class, are there any questions? This doesn't work well, even though you can tell there are people who aren't clear about some things or don't quite understand something. I think we've probably all asked a version of this question, and we've all discovered that almost nobody ever asks a question, unless they're that bright spark in the front row or the clown down the back. Not sure why. Is it because they don't want to look stupid, or they don't want to spend energy formulating a question, or maybe they just want the day to be over? So I don't ask if there are any questions anymore. Instead I ask, so what do you need me to clarify? Or, who'd like me to clarify anything? It's much more effective. Almost every time, hands will go up. PowerPoint. Must you? It's the devil's tool. It's so seductive and yet so poisonous. No training room is ever without it. And it's the easiest way to kill enthusiasm in the class. Few presenters in any field know how to use it effectively. Students take shots of each slide with their phones and stop paying attention. They figure they'll check their phones later, except they don't. Some trainers bring presentations where the whole page is covered in tiny text. I don't know why. To save ink? And turn their backs on the class and read out the whole slide. The students will finish reading the slide about half an hour before the trainer finishes reciting it, so of course the students' attention will be somewhere else. Making paper aeroplanes or something. Laughing at the trainer's comb over. I don't know. I've sat in front of PowerPoint presentations in Australia that are less enlightening than ones I've seen in China, covered in Chinese characters I don't understand. And by the way, the most common backgrounds are, thanks very much, Bill Gates. Design, good design, appropriate design, is not the strong point of Microsoft or of your average trainer. So if you're not a designer, get a good one to do the PowerPoint for you. But what I don't like about PowerPoint is that it directs attention away from the learning. It can be useful and it can be done well, but it takes effort and understanding and practice. The best or least offensive use of PowerPoint is probably to set a simple context and or emotional context for a particular section of the training. For example, a good strong image on a dark background with some large strong text, an explanatory word or two, can suggest an appropriate emotion that can reinforce what's being learnt. Here's another example of me learning by making mistakes. I'd set up a training program, non-accredited, about personal marketing. I spent hours creating what I thought was an interesting, uncluttered series of PowerPoint slides with lots of lovely animation to thrill the kids. I had it all scripted and I was really excited to do the show. What could go wrong? The students were bored to tears, even though it was all about them. But of course it wasn't about them, it was about me and what I thought they needed. It was non-stop slides and my voice reading out the text, and most importantly, because I'd written the script, I didn't allow space for proper interaction with the students, and I was half focused on managing the PowerPoint and talking to the room. So I wasn't 100% present to the students. How could I do better? Well, I could have used just a few slides for illustration when it was necessary. And I could have stopped talking so much and started listening more. And ahead of time I could have told the group I was thinking about doing this thing about personal marketing and asked them what they thought and what they needed and what they'd like to know. And if they thought it was a good idea in principle, then I could have designed it around the advice they gave me. They wouldn't have been bored because they would have been invested in it. They would have had ownership of the product. If you give a boring PowerPoint presentation, you can too easily lose your relationship with the group, and that will cost you in the end in terms of the outcomes for a start. So don't use PowerPoint because it's easy. It's actually really hard to do it effectively. It's often just the lazy option. Put up a series of slides full of text, read it out, before you know it, it's home time. But don't forget to wake up the class before you leave. Story time. What can we do without a whiteboard? Tell stories. Once upon a time, my students were sitting around a large table and they were getting a bit over it all, slumped in their seats, looking down, probably at their phones, and I said, "Let me tell you a story." The response shocked me. Every one of them leaned forward. I mean, everyone. Everyone put their elbows on the table and stared at me expectantly. I don't remember what the story was. I hope it was a good one. But that moment confirmed to me something that I'd only heard from other people. But it's true. People love stories. And that is an example of learning by doing something right. Oh, let me tell you another story. When I was on my trainer training course, towards the end we had to do a presentation, of course. And when it was my turn, I pulled out my USB stick and plugged it into the laptop, turned the projector on, and away we went. I'd never used PowerPoint before, so I had lots of pages of lovely, tiny, almost unreadable text covering the screen. And when I'd finished and it was time for the feedback from the trainer, I'm so grateful that he didn't mention how awful my PowerPoint itself had been. He just said, "Thanks, Graham. That was really interesting." Just one note. Next time, when you're using PowerPoint, it'll probably work better if you don't stand in front of the projector. Here's some advice from a trainer I know who had many, many years of training pilots in front of a whiteboard. What do you do when a student asks you a question and you don't know the answer? But you're supposed to be the expert and you don't want them to know that you don't know. What do you do? Do you A. panic, B. ignore, C. waffle, D. admit you don't know, or E. do this? That's a very good question. What do you think the answer is? Does anyone else know the answer? Okay. You have some homework. Research it and come back tomorrow and tell us all what the answer is, okay? Meanwhile, overnight, you research it and make sure their answer is correct. Playtime. Just remember that play is essential for learning. Role-playing, game-playing, is how we learn as kids, and we probably learn more in the first 5 years of our lives than in the whole of the rest of our lives. The Centre for Educational Neuroscience at University College London says most learning happens in the first 3 years and 90% of brain development happens in the first 5 years. And how do we get most of that learning? Playing games. Watch puppies playing. This is how they learn. And they never stop playing, even into old age. We're the same. Playing is serious. Playing is how we practice doing things we need to learn. Play is mental stimulation. If you have a working dog like a Kelpie or a Border Collie, you'll know how important mental stimulation is for them. Dogs and humans love it, and mental stimulation is the work we do as trainers. And it doesn't matter how old you are. If you want to learn how to have fun, your pup is probably your best teacher because they never stop playing and having fun. Also, playing games and having fun keeps you young. Fun will reinforce your students' attention, engagement, enthusiasm, and recall. So play games in your class. Have fun. One of my favourite students, who was one of those who had escaped the horrors of a civil war, wrote to me after a course. "Sometimes it takes just one person to make you realise the world is full of laughter, fun, and kindness. Thanks to you, brought real delight to us." I could never ask for anything more moving or any better validation of the work I do. That's it for this episode. Feel free to add suggestions and your own ideas in the comments on the episode page. Thanks for listening. You clearly have exceptional stamina and generosity. The next and final episode in this series is The Joy of Paperwork, when we wrap things up. I'll see you then.
This podcast was a 2020 Pod Roger production. This podcast is supported by GrowSites. Affordable, beautiful, professional websites, tailored to your specific needs. To see how you can grow your projects, visit GrowSites. GROWSITES. Music from filmmusic.io, Schools Out, and Halloween Atmosphere, by Sasha Inde, www.sasha-inde.de. License, CC BY, creativecommons.org/licenses/BY/4.0.